It's a footnote that Mizoknisht as a yomtiv keitavek. You're not supposed to say that a yomtiv is leaving, departing. You're supposed to say a yomtiv kumtzu. Every yomtiv, since we grow up with yomtivim from little children, we sometimes fail to appreciate the fact that a yomtiv is a oasis, and it's a place to recharge. It's a place for a person to reconnect, strengthen himself, and continue onwards with newfound strength. We want to tonight share some lessons of Chanukah that could shed light on things that happen to a person on a daily basis, and we fail most times to use the Chanukah event as a precedent and as a guide for us in our lives. We all know that there are two Mayadim that were established by the Chazal: Chanukah and Purim. The difference is manifest in the way we celebrate the two different Yom Tovim. While Purim is separated, is celebrated by Mishteh v'Simcha, partying, drinking, Chanukah is celebrated by Hoydah and Hallel. And the question is, why did the Chazal establish it in this fashion? In both times, we were faced with oppressive regimes who tried to oppress us and eradicate Klal Yisrael, Kedushas Yisrael, and in both we prevailed, yet we celebrate Chanukah b'Hallel v'Hoydah. And the question is, why not with Mishteh v'Simcha? So there is a famous Levush. The Levush says that there's a fundamental difference between Chanukah and Purim, and that fundamental difference lies in the fact that in Purim, Haman wanted to destroy Lahashmid, La'aroig, Ula'abed, to destroy and to eradicate. He wanted to make a Holocaust. That was his plan. B'yoy mechot, u'shlolom lovois, there should be no memory left of the Am Yisrael. We're in Chanukah, the Yevonim wanted to destroy us, but they weren't out to destroy our bodies. They weren't out to destroy the women and children. They weren't out to be shlolem lovois. They were intent on gzeiras hashmat. They were trying to eradicate the unique Judaism, Yahadus, the religion that represented our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is what they were trying to destroy. So therefore, says the Levush, when it came to the Yom Tov of Purim, when they prevailed and they were menatzeach over the Amalekim, the way they celebrated, they instituted the celebration should be one of a physical nature. Since they wanted to destroy the physical aspect of the Yid, they therefore enacted a takana to celebrate it by physical enhancements, treating the physical aspect of a person to extras, mishtavisim. On Hanukkah, however, where there was no challenge to the physical guf of Klal Yisrael, over there they celebrated by being mechazik the Yahadus. They added lahalel, lahoidos. Over there was a different kind of that is what the Levush does to explain this chilek between Purim and Chanukah. The question, however, arises is there's another chiluk that's boilate, another chiluk between the two Yomim Tovim that stands out, and that is the way Klal Yisrael dealt with each one of these challenges, which is very perplexing. The challenge of Haman of Purim was a challenge to eradicate in one day the entire Jewish nation. Murder them, simply. If they would have asked me, and perhaps most of you, how would you think to deal with this problem? You would say, well, first I think we should find out if there are any Jews who served in the special forces. Maybe we can find some Jews who are gun carriers. Maybe we can find out how to weaponize every kehillah. Maybe we should not go like sheep. Makes sense to me. You don't find at all, that they attempted to address this physical problem with any physical response. To us, that's very perplexing. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to Hanukkah, where there was no physical danger to the Jewish nation, they didn't want, the Yevanim weren't interested at all in eradicating the Jewish people. They wanted to diminish their attachment to their religion. Over there, you might have said, well, maybe we should daven, maybe we should fast, maybe we should engage them in talks. Let's explain to them freedom of religion, explain to them the importance of our religion, and so on and so forth. And over there, they take up and bear arms, they weaponize themselves, and they go to fight against these crazy odds. That sounds like a very unusual response. So we need to understand why in the Purim scenario there was no suggestion at all to weaponize and fight back physically, where logic dictates that that should be the normal approach, not to go like sheep. We've all read books and heard speeches about how if I would have been there. I remember a very famous speaker when I was a young boy who made a big reishim on me. He's a very inspiring person, and he spoke about how we have to arm ourselves. Every person has to learn how to fight, and every Jew at 22, and he got all worked up, and never again, and if it ever comes back to us, this time we're going to be ready for them. And I remember hearing those rushes. They made a lot of sense. I remember even going to my grandfather then, at that time, and saying, Zadie, is this right or is this wrong? He said, he means well, but he's famished. I told him that. He came to me already and asked me if I would support him. And I said, your heart is in the right place, but your mind is not. You're not going b'derech hatayr. But I heard speeches very personally. I remember he was very motivating figure, but it made sense. But here we have the Jews facing a precedent. We have a historical precedent, and that with nobody even thought about it. Now don't say because it was against all odds, because Achashverosh was Melech Bekipa and he had 127 Medinas under his belt. He wouldn't stand a chance. Because trust me, in the Hanukkah story, we had 12 people, as Rashi says, then the Dvarim, going up against these immense odds, powerful Syrian Greek armies. There was no hope and there was no chance of them making it. Yet they did it. Because that was what was the order of the day. They did it. And so we have to understand what's the reason why they took up arms in a case where we would have thought it's pretty radical to go start fighting with people, killing people, attacking them. Who does such things? And you all know the story of, in the Holocaust, what triggered Kristallnacht, when some young Jewish hothead walked into an envoy of Germany's building and shot him, and that triggered Kristallnacht that night. He meant well, he was upset, but is that the answer? I don't think so. Another question we have to answer. To go to a war is not an emotional decision. We as Yid know there is a hilchus melachim u'milchoseim. There's a halachas to melcham. To go to war, you can't just go to war. People can't decide they're going to war. There's dinim of the melech, of Sanhedrin. There are all kind of criteria and parameters to decide whether you engage in battle. As dangerous the situation is, we can't decide to go to war. How in the world, what license did the Maccabees have to go to war? Everybody knows the famous question. How could any Jew go to war? The most valuable thing to a Jew is his life. The Torah places pikuach nefesh above all else. Pikuach nefesh is lecha kol ha-Torah kula. So the famous question is asked, how can you ever engage in a war? How can you ever go to war? It's pikuach nefeshes. So I heard from my Rebbe in the name of his father, Miskarov, and I saw them in Chazchinah says it afterwards also similarly, that milchama is not a creation of man. Milchama is a creation of the Torah. And when something has a chalois din milchama, and it meets the parameters of the Torah of war, so then the Torah, one of the dinim of milchama, is that the pikuach nefesh concern is suspended. Suspended. It's not doich pikuach nefesh, but it's suspended, that value of pikuach nefesh. But here, what license did the Maccabees have to enter and engage in a war of pikuach nefesh against all odds? Who paskened that? Was the Sanhedrin paskening that? Was there Melech paskening that? How did he do this? So there's a Neridik Yisoid from Rebbe Elchanan Wasserman. Rebbe Elchanan says, Voshteta, in this historical event, studying the Chazal's response, we see a tremendous difference as follows. That whenever you're facing a physical challenge, there is no mokim, no thought, no place of bearing arms to save yourself. The habola hargecha hashkein behargoi, that everybody bandies around the self-defense folks, and I used to feel like that too, but that's not Torah. Torah says that that's not a response. Vehi loy kitzloch, it will never, ever succeed. Had the Jews risen up and made groups, they might have killed a couple of Achashverosh's and Haman's people, but they would never be matzliach. Over there, the response was Leich Knoises Kol Yehudim Betzumo Alai Shloisha Yomim. Gather the people, prayer, fasting, and tshuva, is the only sole response to that situation. However, when one is facing a spiritual challenge, spiritual oppression, over there it calls for a person to go out, b'mesiras nefesh, to go out to war and do battle. That's for state, and what we derive from the Yontif of Purim and the Yontif of Chanukah. Now, how do we understand that? Why is it like that? So he explains that even though everything comes from Hashem, you really have to pose a question. Hakol b'idei Shemayim. Why in the world would Hashem allow Goyim to come challenge Yidden with a gzeira of Shemad? Hashem wants us to fulfill the Torah. He wants us to be Shomer Torah mitzvahs. Why would Hashem enable and allow nations of the world to challenge us and get us not to do mitzvahs, to prohibit us from keeping Shabbos, prohibit us from keeping Milah, prohibit us from learning Torah? It goes against all the said logic. So he says, the answer is as follows. Hashem has two ways he conducts himself in this world. One is called Maisa Satan, and another category is called Maisa Hashem. And that means as follows. When a person, Hashem wants to give a person an Einish to wake him up, Hashem himself presents the person with a challenge. He threatens his life. He uses Haman directly. That's called a Maisa from Hashem, to scare the Yidden. G'doylo hasaras tabas, the Gemara said. Great was the removing of the signet ring of Achashverosh and give it them more than all the prophets and all the prophetesses. That scared the Yidden, that motivated them to come back to HaKadosh Baruch. That's Maisa Hashem. Over there, they weren't challenged in the Yiddishkeit. They were challenged in their existence, their kiyum, their chayim. That's a Maisa Hashem. However, when in that Yevonim's time they challenge us spiritually, Gzeirah Shmat, no Shabbos, no Torah, no Milah, no Chodesh, no this and that was not from Hashem, he says. That power, that challenge comes from the Satan. That's a Maisa Satan. Now he doesn't explain how it works, but we shall give you an explanation in a moment. But he says, any time that a Jew and Klal Yisrael is challenged with a spiritual challenge, that's a Maisa of Satan. I can't tell you how many people who've called me up and said, what does Hashem want from me? Why would Hashem make me go through such a challenge? Doesn't Hashem want me to learn Torah? People have said to me, why is this person, why is that person challenging me from learning? I'm having challenges to learn. I'd like to learn. Why am I having challenges to keep Shabbos? In early America, there was a very big challenge to keep Shabbos. Why did Hashem present a challenge? Hashem wants Yidden to keep Shabbos. The answer was, it was Maisa Satan, not Maisa Hashem. Hashem created that Satan. Hashem enabled the Satan to get the power. And the power comes from, once the Satan has the power, the Satan challenges Klal Yisrael and Yidden spiritually. But that's the difference, he explains, between the responses to a Maisa Satan. The only response is then to stand up and be willing to be Moiser Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. You got to be Moiser Nefesh for Shmiras HaTorah and Shmiras HaMitzvahs. But when it's facing a physical challenge, then the Eitzah is not to stand up and arm yourself, but rather the Eitzah is to Tshuva, Tefillah, and Tzedakah. That's Mavirin, that Roya HaGzeira. Now we want to understand, how is it that the Satan has such a power? And the answer to that question is, B'chon doesn't explain this, but this is explained in other Sfarim, but it works like this. Hashem created Zeh Lu'umah Zeh, Toiv Keneged Ra. whenever a Yid, or Klal Yisro, a group of Yid, are Shemir Torah Mitzvahs, that Shmiras HaTorah VaMitzvahs gives them power. It gives them power, it connects them to Hashem, and it empowers them in the world. When they are Misrasha, when they become weak and haphazard in their Avodas Hashem, so it diminishes their Koyach, and then that Koyach is now granted to the Satan. And the Satan can now come and challenge a person in those areas where he's weak. So in the time of the Yevonim, I remember hearing this from my grandpa, thinking it was a massive chiddush at the time. You know, most of Klal Yisrael had gone over to the side of the Hellenists. They were Hellenized. They weren't on the side of the Maccabees. And the Maccabees saw that this lack of dedication and commitment to Klal Yisrael was going to enable and empower the Satan to challenge Klal Yisrael. And then the challenges came. It came to the point they were bringing a chazer on the Mizbeach. You know what kind of a pagan that is? A chazer in the Beis HaMikdash. And they kept on bringing these nukzeiros and nukzeiros and nukzeiros. And they saw that the only way to counter, to challenge the Satan, is by standing up and being Moser Nefesh. You had to be Moser Nefesh. There was no other way. That is the only response that's going to be Matzliach. That's what it calls for. Now, I don't know. The Chafetz Chaim said, does it mean to say you're going to be Matzliach and live? You may have to sacrifice your life. But if you sacrifice some lives, that will abolish, annul the Gezerah. And that's what that happened over here. They were Moser Nefesh. Baruch Hashem, they lived to talk about it, most of them. That was a speed the point that they managed to do that. So now we know where they got that koyach from. When somebody's facing a challenge of Mesiras Nefesh, the Torah says the only thing, you don't need a Melech, you don't need a Melchama, you don't need Sanhedrin. When you're facing a challenge of Yiddishkeit, the only thing that's going to help you is going to be this factor of standing up and being Moser Nefesh. On the other hand, when a person faces a physical challenge, the only thing that's going to work is going to be Tshuva Tefillah Tzedakah. Because a person could slip, it doesn't mean it's a Maaseh Satan, he has a shalom and gets sick, he gets a physical oppression, he gets assaulted, he gets this, he gets that, and he wants to know how to stand up, he stands up, and he counters that. Now let me tell you how you can apply this to our lives on a daily basis. One day I get a call, a doctor calls me up, he's part of a large team in Cleveland. He used to be in another city, he moved up here in order to have more Yiddishkeit for his family. He wanted to have a stronger Shabbos. He wanted to have a better environment. And he made it very clear in the contract that he wants Shabbos, he takes no call. He'll work any other holiday. If it's not a Yom Tov or Shabbos, he's happy to work. But not on Shabbos. And if there's some talks back and forth, the contract, they agreed to do that. He began to work in this group. He began to learn Torah with me at night. And after maybe a year or 2 years, one day the head of the group calls him in and he says, "Doc, you know our terms we have with you about you don't work on the weekends? There's been a change. We've been discussing it. It's not acceptable. Not acceptable. You gotta come. You wanna stay on the team? You gotta take your time, take your call on Shabbos." He said, "But I made up with you." He said, "Yeah, listen, there's ways around it. I'm sure you're smart enough, you're a religious Jew. You guys come up with all kinds of ideas. I'm sure you'll figure something out how to do it." And he said, "If not, you're not on our team, you're not working in this hospital anymore." And this guy's personality is he's one of these very nervous type of people. He believes in the hafta Hashem lekecha b'chol moedecha. Like the Gemara says, some people it's chaviv aleihem emoinam yaisir migufam. They're more attached to their money than to their life. They see their money as their life. That's his personality. So he called me up in a very big tizzy. What am I going to do? I can't lose my job. What does Hashem want from me? I moved to this city for this reason. I had a great practice. I was established. I was moiser nefesh to give it up. What should I do? I said, what do you think you're doing? I want to call the ACLU. I want to call my lawyer. I want to see the contract again. We made up a contract. I want to see the practice to them. I said, Doc, you're getting a little whacked here. You're not thinking Jewish. I said, what would the Torah want you to do? Understand why you're getting this challenge. I said, we're talking about the 20th century. For heaven's sake, I said, working on Shabbos and not working on Shabbos is acceptable, especially in hospitals. There are a lot of frum doctors. It's not an unheard of thing, not working on Shabbos. So I said to him, what do you think is going on? He said, I'm not sure. I said, I'll tell you what's going on. He said, I think it's anti-Semitism, it's the Jews. I said, oh, no, you're not giving me that again. What, do you work for the ADL or something? I said, what is this? I said, let me tell you what it is. Identify this. Are they going to bust your bones? Are they going to bust your teeth? Are they going to crack your legs? No. What they're going to do is they threaten you. If you don't go along with their Shabbos program, you're going to be fired. So what you're doing is you're being challenged in a spiritual oppression. Now, why in the world, you ask me, the doctor, I said to the doctor, why would Hashem do this to you if you want to keep Shabbos? I said, it must be that your commitment to Shabbos is lacking. You're missing something. He said, what do you mean lacking? He said, I'm becoming better. I learn with you and I like them. You see, I'm growing. I said, it must be. That's what Hashem telling me. I said, I don't know you, what you do personally on Shabbos, but I know you are Misrashel and Avoid of Shabbos. He said, you want to tell me how? I said, 1 second, I'll get my crystal ball and I'll try to figure it out. I said, what did I do? I said, oh, somebody stole it. Loving must have it. How can I figure out what the crystal ball is? I said, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I said, we'll make an analysis. We'll try to break it down. I said, do you work on Friday? I said, do you ever go in on Shabbos? No. You ever cut corners in Shabbos in your house? You ever keep the radio on Shabbos? You ever keep the TV on Shabbos? You ever do it? No, I don't. I said, you work on Fridays? Yes. I said, when's your last appointment before Shabbos? He said, my last appointment I take is 1 hour before Shabbos. I said, excuse me? I said, do you have an office in your house? Do you work on Fridays out of your house? No, I work at a hospital. I said, I know where you live. I know what hospital is. How do you take your last appointment an hour before Shabbos? When do you get home? On Shabbos, when you become Hasidish and decide if it's not yet Shkia time, or if it's, how do you rationalize this? I mean, this rush hour. I know exactly your route you take home. You must make it home, if you make it home, by the skin of your teeth. I said, you think that's covered Shabbos? He said, you know, but I'm under the stress and I'm under the pressure, so I don't want to show them that I'm not going to take 2 days off. I said, you're taking off? This is for Shabbos. You're being shomer Shabbos. Do you believe Shabbos is Hashem's mitzvah? He said, so what are you suggesting? I said, I suggest you mikabel upon yourself. You're going to be home 2 hours before Shabbos starts. You're going to be in your house. You figure out the math when the last appointment you're going to have is. You know, but I start giving me a whole argument. I got to make money for the group, make money for the hospital. You know, I got to justify my... Bubba Mai says, you talk to your Bubba about it. No. I said, well, what do you drink a cup? I told him. I said, I'm this, I'm that. I said, this, I believe we've just identified where the dog is buried. Right here. And they say in Yiddish, do lick the hund bagrum. I said, really, Doc, I really think this is the problem. He said, oh, so you want me to not only not to work on Shabbos, I should start working less on Friday, yeah? And that's going to make my problem go away. I said, I have no doubt about it. I said, I know you don't understand it. He said, that's Mesiris Nefesh. He says, I said, I told him that's exactly right. That's Mesiris Nefesh. And I tell him the Chanukah word. I tell him, this is the answer. I know it doesn't make sense. Could you imagine if Yehuda HaMakabi would have asked you, should he undertake with his family of 12 people, go up against these hundreds of thousands of Syrian Greeks who are armed to the teeth? What would you have said? Ah, come on, that's ridiculous. That's serious, never, that's suicide. But they did it, and they succeeded. So I'm telling you, this is what it's going to be. Don't call any lawyers. I'm telling you, test me out. I said, if I'm wrong, you'll find out. So you'll be angry at me. You won't be the first guy that's angry at me. But if I'm right, you'll have discovered a tremendous secret in your life. I said, think about Ovi Shabbos. His wife called me to make sure she had it right. She wasn't sure that the husband had it right, the formula. I explained it to her again personally. At Monday, he didn't go to work. He was afraid. I said, Doc, don't be silly. Go to work. Forget it. Just to make up a decision. Make a Kabbalah with you and your wife. No more appointments. You're going to be home 2 hours before Shabbos. And he did. And he went back to work on Tuesday. He called me up Monday night. Family had meetings and meetings and meetings. You know, people like meetings. And they finally decided they're going to do that. He went back to work Tuesday. I meet him Tuesday night at the shir. I said, no, what happened? He said, nothing happened today. I had him go over to them. I said, but you made a decision. You need to tell your secretary no appointments before Shabbos. And this guy's booked up early. I said, yeah. I told him to cancel appointments 2 hours. I'm going to be home 2 hours before Shabbos. And it went on like this for about 2 months. And then one day he met the head of the group. He was in a room with him. And he said, Doc, remember when I spoke to you a couple months ago? You know, I thought it over. Forget about it. You can continue working on Shabbos. You continue your Shabbos program. It's no problem. I told the guy, see what I mean? And you wanted to go lawyers. You wanted to sue. You wanted to get this. What are you suing for? But now I'll tell you a story on the other side of the fence. A number of years ago in Cleveland, there began to become assaults. People getting assaulted in Cleveland Heights area. There were dark colored people that were starting up with Yidden, coming home from the kollel at night, walking the street at night, robbing homes. And a group of, one guy was a military man, he used to learn with me for years. They called a meeting, and they invited me to the meeting, and they said, we want to appoint you as our rabbi. You're a macho kind of guy, and we need somebody who's going to not be afraid like the other rabbanim are afraid. We want you to stand up. We want you to lead us. We're all going to carry weapons. We're going to drive around the street with weapons. I said, are you 5 years old? What's wrong with you? What do you think, you're a cowboy? When you go bang, bang, pow, ow, what are you going to do? What are you talking about? I thought, is that the Torah way? Who you decided, because you went to the military, you decided that's the Torah way? You got to take care of yourself. Self-defense is very important. So what are you not Moritz? How do you get that Torah psak? I told him, I understand you. Don't get me wrong. You like to, you know, you guys give me an Uzi. I mow them all down. Anybody starts up with me, you know. No, you're dreaming. You know, your guy goes home and punches your pillow and imagines he's beating up 50 Arabs. You know what I mean? What are you drain a cup? You know what I mean? It doesn't happen like that. So I explained to them why it won't work. I said, you think it's a coincidence that the neighborhood is turning and there's assaults, but not everybody's getting assaulted. And it's not always getting assaulted. Not everybody's getting robbed. Hashem picks his customers. Each one has a number. Why don't you identify the problem? Each person identified the problem. Rabbi, I was very surprised at you. He thought you'd be the macho guy over here. I said, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but not. All these guys weaponized themselves in their cars. They carry weapons illegally, which I told me are nuts. One guy was an ex-rabbi. He got arrested one day, and the cop told him to open up his trunk. He saw rifles in there. They arrested the guy. The guy made a scandal on the guy. But the head guy, the whole thing, one night was standing on Taylor Road. That's like the main drag in Cleveland Heights. In front of Unger's Bakery, about 12 o'clock at night. We're schmoozing with a couple guys, maybe one or two guys. And suddenly a car pulls up with four colored fellas. They came out of the car and they stuck guns in the guy's head. They said, give me a while, I'm going to blow your head off. This is a military man, you know what I mean? So, of course, what did he do? He wasn't that stupid. He decided he wasn't Yehuda Maccabee. He decided he wants to have some weapons in his hands before. So he was going to invite him to his house. Maybe you want to come to my house. I have weapons in my house. I want to show you my weapons. I want to shoot you. Maybe I have weapons for guys like you. No, they took his wallet, they punched him in the face, and they left him to be. He called me up the next day. I said, do you see what the Baruch Hashem did to you? You're the weapons man. Hashem sent you. How are you going to weaponize? What did it help you? What are your weapons going to do? You walk around with guns like this, sticking out your head, and walking down the street like this? They'll arrest you on the spot. The police will arrest you. What do you, what is no seichel? Hashem is talking to you. Hashem showed you the lesson. It's never going to work. It does not work. I understand why you want it to work. I appreciate it. I grew up feeling like that. I also wanted to be a cowboy. I wanted to be a policeman. The shoulder robbers. I was no normal kid. But it's not that it doesn't work. I said, try doing tshuva. If you do tshuva and you figure out why Hashem's giving you, having you get assaulted, maybe you do tshuva, the problem will go away. Have you ever thought about that? And somebody called me up last year and said to me, Rabbi, what do you think about this countries now that are making zeiros against bris milah? Can you imagine that? Such anti-Semitism. What's going to start? And they're forbidding shechita in some countries. I said, this is not a new shaila. This is an old shaila. What did the Devil say about that? It's to us, it sounds preposterous. We live in a land of the free. We live in America. We can't imagine America would be so desirous of shechita and things. I said, what do you think it's about? I said, I'll tell you. Rabbi Yeruchim Levavitz, the Mashgiach of Emir, spoke about this. At the time when they made those gzeiras, everybody came along and said that the reason for those gzeiras was because anti-Semitism is starting to rear its head. And because it's starting to rear its head, this is the result. They're starting to make laws, anti-Jewish laws. And Rabbi Yerucham said, this is such an Irish guy. Rabbi Yerucham said, it's baloney, it's not evidence. These mitzvahs, per se, shechita and milah, represent and personify the Kedushas Yisrael. We're not just an ummah, a nation that keeps mitzvahs. We have Kedushas Yisrael. And our Kedusha is sustained through Kashrus and through Bris Milah. And when the Klal Yisrael is Misrasha in the Avoida of Kedushas Yisrael, Hashem gives the Satan the Kayach to now come. And this is a message. You gotta strengthen yourself in Kedushas Yisrael. Now for that you gotta stand up. For that you gotta be Moser Nefesh. Now I will make one point that Rabbi Chanan says that when Amalek is challenging the Jewish people, really we should go to war. And he says that the Chofetz Chaim told him that when Russia began their oppressive regime against the Jewish nation and tried to eradicate Yahadus from the world, he said the Eitzah would have been if a handful of Jews would have stood up and been Moser Nefesh against that massive government. Yes, some lives would have been lost, but the Gezeirah would have been averted right away. That's what he heard from the Chofetz Chaim. Rabbi Chanan himself said, when Amalek challenged Jewish people, he said, I can't suggest that we should do war because I'm not sure who to do the war against. But what he did suggest was, by learning Torah and strengthening Torah, that is the antithesis of Amalek. The strength Amalek derives is from when Limud HaTorah is on the down. Everybody knows if Yavi Amalek Berefidim, they came to Refidim with Klal Yisrael Rofi and Dibetaira, that's where it came. So the answer is Mechazik yourself in Torah. But this is a tremendous insight for us. My grandfather, I once spoke to him about this. He said, you know what kills him most about the Holocaust? You know what the tragedy that is tragic for him? Not what the Germans did to the Jewish people. The worst part of the Holocaust is this could have been averted. And it could have been avoided and averted easily, he said. We had a very distinct precedent in history. The Purim story, he said to me, was a story where somebody rose up and decided to eradicate and decimate the Jewish people in one day. Not gas them, kill them, murder them, annihilate them in one day in 127 Medinas. Even Hitler couldn't do that. He may have dreamed of doing that. We had the precedent. Lech, if the Gedolim could have gotten together at that point and established a tainus for 3 days of fasting and praying, that could have been avoided. He said the worst part of the Gzeira was that they couldn't unify. The Gedolim weren't unified. There was no Mordechai who was powerful enough to unify the Jewish people. And everybody was going, some people believed it, some people didn't believe it. Some people didn't accept it. Some people said we should rise up and do arms, and some people said we should run away. And it was, we lost. That was the greatest tragedy. But we had a very clear prescription of how to avoid it. The precedent was ours. That was the Purim precedent. So now we have in our lives tremendous insight to be gained from understanding this. The next time a person suffers. Here's a young man who calls me up one day and he says, my parents decided I have to leave yeshiva. I can't learn Torah anymore. I said, how old are you? No, I'm only 18. I said, 18, you have to leave yeshiva? Do you want to learn? Yes. I said, that's a spiritual challenge. Are they going to hit you? Are they going to beat you? No. I said, it's a spiritual challenge. You got to be meisa nefesh. What should I do? I said, pray to Hashem and make a decision. You're not leaving yeshiva no matter what. Hashem's testing your resolve. Hashem must see in you or discern something in you that you're not really committed. And when your parents tell you to leave at this young age, you're being challenged. That's called religious persecution. It's a free country to do what you want. I told the guy, just stand up. I've had instances where people stood up and they succeeded. I'll give you another story. This is also a very common story. A young man comes to me and he says, hey, brother, I'm having a terrible, terrible dilemma. What's my dilemma? I'm from, he's from, his wife's from. He has one sister in the world. His sister is very close to him. When he got married in Eretz Yisrael, his sister came to him in Eretz Yisrael at the wedding. She helped him with thousands of dollars. She's been close to him from a baby. It's the bond is unbelievable. The problem is she's now marrying a German Nazi guy. I mean, a real ruthless anti-Semite. That's what the guy said to me. He said, but I have to go to the wedding. It's my only sister. She said, you have to come to the wedding. I came to your wedding in Israel, thousands of miles. I'm giving you a ticket to come. She lived in California. I said, I'll give you a ticket to come. And my mother saying, you're going to break the family, you're going to destroy the family. I've heard this time and time again. I hear it so many times. And I tell people, I told this young man, I don't envy you. I understand your position. You have a small family. You're close. Your sister was very dedicated to you. But now Hashem's challenging you. Do you think it's appropriate for somebody who's from, who's religious, to go dance and party at a wedding that's a symbol of Chil Hashem? A Jew marrying out, that's a very strong symbol of Chil Hashem. You're going to participate in that? You're going to congratulate her? You're going to make a toast? You're going to go and just smile over there? If you go there, sit on the floor and you cry, maybe you can go. That way you wouldn't solve any of the problems. He said, what should I do? I said, I'm going to tell you what day it is. I know you're not going to believe me, but I'm going to have to tell you this one to trust me. You're going to have to trust me. If you do the right thing, I give you my word, nothing's going to happen. Because I understand that this challenge is a challenge from the sun. Part of you, even though you became from and you're very committed and very dedicated, but part of you doesn't see being on the other side as the worst thing in the world. It's not... Okay, everybody, let it. You're a living, let live type of fella. That's how this kind of fella is. So Hashem is testing you. I said, if you're right, your sister will never talk to you again. If I'm right, she'll be fully understanding about it. So I'm going to tell you what to do. I want you to fly out to LA. And I want you to explain to her exactly what I'm going to tell you about why you can't participate in this wedding. You're not trying to rain on the party. She doesn't understand better. And you'll feel bad for her. But you have to tell her from your vantage point, where you stand right now, you understand that a Jewish person marrying out is a tremendous desecration of everything that's holy to the Jewish people and holy to Hashem. Hashem created us. I explained what this says, that Hashem created each one single and he gave us a mission to go find our mates and to attach yourself. It's the last part of the Bria and creation that Hashem left in our hands. I said, now she's going to marry somebody out. That's a bittul net. That's her job. To meet up with her mate that Hashem created for her. That's not her mate. Tell her, with all due respect, I just cannot participate in this thing. She said, you think that's going to work? I said, yeah, my word, it's going to work. He flew out to L.A. He called me up. He told her his whole spiel. And she said to him, my brother, I understand you very well. And I forgive you. I'm going to be very sad, but I forgive you. I understand why you can't participate. He was blown away. I said, you're ready to sacrifice everything, thinking that you're going to lose your family. Your sister said she understands. And he's close to his sister till today. Doesn't say a word to the guy, but says he speaks to his sister. It's sad. I said, you see what I mean? I said, you want to pass that test. You would have got it. Think you would have been happier? You would have been successful? No. Now you've succeeded. When it's a spiritual challenge, the only answer is me, la Hashem, Eli. Have a wonderful Hanukkah.
Why do you stop?